Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jimmy Cephalo in just a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call today. Syracuse, Matt Park, my old friend on IMG last night. Big shot.
Gillen spin dribble. They need a three for the tie. Gillen in trouble. Left side. 3 seconds. Gillen tough three.
Oh! Yes! To tie it at 87 with 1.1 second left. John Gillen stone cold.
Gillen gets to 39 and ties the game for the sixth time tonight.
Orange in overtime won it. 102-93. The game I did last night went three overtimes and ended up 110-102. Was outscoring the NBA. We'll get to that in a little bit. First, let's go to Miami. Very pleased to bring in the former Nittany Lion, former Pittston area Patriot, former Miami Dolphin, and AFC champion. Great broadcaster who also worked the national championship game, Penn State-Miami, in January 2nd, 87. And has gone to a great career, including the play-by-play voice of the Miami Dolphins, Jimmy Cephalo. Jimmy, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Steve. Hope all is well up in State College.
Everything's going really well. I want to get to the Super Bowls, the Super Bowl coming up. You played in two of them. And I remember something distinctly when you came and guest lectured to my class here at Penn State, which is still one of the great days that we've had in that class because they learned so much from you. You talked about nerves. Natural for anybody. What was it like for you in the two Super Bowls? Because, like any athlete, they would be nerves before a game. Was it more so for a Super Bowl than anything else for you, or the same?
No, it was more. I mean, you realize, you know, if you stand in the middle of the Rose Bowl, as I did that morning, a beautiful South California morning, gorgeous weather, and you look around and realize that there's going to be a billion people watching you that day, and then realize the stakes of it, that a win or a loss will probably define you and your career for the rest of your life. There's just so much at stake. And plus, the desire to win was so extreme. Now, we lost that day, but I had bigger nerves than ever. And I caught a pass early in the game, which really helped the nerves to go away, because you really need to get hit or to get something going to be able to get rid of that. But that's why when I look at this game, I think of all those Falcons who had never played in a Super Bowl before. It will impact them. And the Patriots are, this is old hat to them.
In fact, that catch you made is still the fifth longest play in Super Bowl history, that 76-yard pass from David Woodley. I know it's a long time ago, but what do you remember about that play?
Well, it was an adjustment that we had to make. First, David was at the time the youngest quarterback to ever start a Super Bowl, and I think he was 23 years old, if I remember correctly. And he was, although he never said anything, he was obviously nervous as well. The fact that showed on his performance, he had a very rough day. But we had to make an adjustment. We both noticed it, saw it, and made the adjustment. It was supposed to be a hitch. They're going to just throw me the football standing there, and blockers were going to come from the inside and go. But they rolled the coverage up, and I had a go downfield, and David threw a nice pass, and we wound up scoring on it. And David completed a total of three more passes the entire afternoon.
Yeah, that was it. If you were to pull the Falcons aside, what advice would you give them, because you've gone through it as a first time?
I would say find the closest man with a different color jersey on and hit him as soon as you can, because it gets easier after that. And that's the truth. You just hit somebody right away. I don't care what position you're playing, where you are, just hit somebody. And the nerves, it's amazing how that works in football, but the nerves just kind of dissipate, and you play a better football game. The quicker you do it, the better off you are.
One of the reporters, who's one of the pool reporters, there are two pool reporters, one for each team, said that they really love being the pool reporter because it reminds them, because they get to go to practice, that it's a game. How important is it for the player to remember as the week goes, it is a game?
It's important, but it doesn't translate, dude. It really doesn't. I mean, you're never going to play in a bigger game in your life. You're never going to have so much on the line. You know, what happens, the Super Bowls we played in, we'd set an anniversary, the 25th anniversary of Super Bowl 17, a couple years ago it's been now. But all the guys came back. Now, it would have been different to have a 25th anniversary of a Super Bowl championship rather than an AFC championship. It follows your whole life, your whole career. You're introduced as Super Bowl champion. And there's so many other ramifications, both with your career inside of football and outside of it. And everybody understands that now. Everybody's trying to find their next profession. I was lucky. I knew what I wanted to do, and I've been following it that entire time. But it's impossible to sit there and say this is just a game because it's such big business, both for the teams, the fans, and for the players, too.
As the play-by-play voice of the Dolphins, Jimmy, you saw the Patriots in person twice this year. What struck you about them? And I know there's common threads, but what struck you about this particular team? Because you and I both know that each year, each team has its own personality.
Well, you know, when you look at the Patriots have so much... they're extraordinarily talented, but beyond that, though, they may not be the most talented team in football, but they are the best coordinator. That's the best coach group that I've seen since the Shula team took the field. Defensively, they're giving up fewer points than anybody in football, about 15.7. And I keep looking at it and saying, how does that happen? Where's the stars? Point them out to me. And there are really no big, giant superstars there. It's just a well-oiled machine who all take care of what they have to take care of. And it doesn't happen all that often in football that way. People get out of the lane. People try to do too much. But not a Belichick coach team, and that's why they're the best team in football. And their offense with Brady there, I mean, I think he'll play another 5 or 6 years. I really do. He's been amazing.
I have to ask you about Eat This Drink That Go. I have to.
Yeah.
This is marvelous because this starts with your family. It goes way back. When did you develop this interest, even though your great-grandfather, your grandfather, your father brought it over? Where did you get the interest?
Well, I was carrying boxes of grape to a crusher before I even touched a microphone or a football when I was a little boy. So it started then, and every time I walk into a winery now, the smell of crushed grapes or fermenting tanks bring me back to my childhood. So that's where it all started. And yeah, I've owned wine stores and wine bars, and my business partner and I, when this all happened, said, gee whiz, you know what, let's do a radio show. And then a TV group came to us and said, would you do it on TV too? So it became Eat This Drink That Go. People can listen to it worldwide on iHeartMedia, on the iHeartMedia app, Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. And television down here on the Beach Channel, which is something my partner and I are involved with as well. So it's all about food and travel and wine. We have winemakers on. We have great chefs from around the world on. It's been a labor of love, that's for sure.
It's interesting because I've always felt that my broadcast partner for football, Jack Hamm, I've always felt he was a wine connoisseur. But you collect. What has it taken for you to collect what you have today?
It's taken about 25 years, I guess. I mean, what's fun for me is I walk in. I took out a bedroom of my house, and I basically, because we had no cellars here in South Florida, took out a bedroom and I had to insulate the entire thing, put a cooling unit in, rack the whole place, and it's the wine cellar. And so I love going in there on a Friday or Saturday night and finding something that I'd forgotten about that I'd collected, 20 years ago. My daughter will turn 21 next year, and I bought a lot of wine from 1997. I'll open when the day she turns 21, and I did it all those years ago with that in mind. It's fun to do, and there's a history to every bottle, not just where you collected it, where you bought it, why you bought it, but think about what was going on in America or the world when you pull out a bottle from the late 40s or from 1959, which is one of the great years in Bordeaux. What was going on in the world at that time? What were these grapes for hanging out a vine not long after the Korean War? Or elements of that just, I think, make wine fascinating.
When you talk about the show itself, you would think, okay, there are certain things we can do. Have you been amazed by the number of topics you've been able to cover in a show like that, both on TV and on iHeartRadio?
Yeah, they're never ending because it's easy to wind up with a chef who'll have a new type of ingredient that we've never heard of before, and he's making it important. Turmeric pasta, I'll give you that example.
Okay.
We have a wonderful chef here of a great restaurant group called the Grasper Group, and he comes in. I said, what are you making for a chef? Because we built a beautiful kitchen studio. He said, I'm making turmeric pasta. I've never heard of using turmeric as an ingredient like that.
Right.
And sure enough, the more and more we investigated, it's popping up all over the country because of the health benefits of turmeric. And it was wonderful. It was terrific. So there's a never-ending list of topics, including grapes that have been long forgotten. We found a grape, an ancient grape in Italy called Scialpino, that we're doing a story on. That was basically forgotten. It was an ancient grape, and they were going to bury it under. And someone decided to try to bring it back, and it turned into a very popular grape. So there's lots of stories to be able to talk about when you're discussing food, wine, and travel.
And by the way, I strongly encourage the audience to take a long look at turmeric, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
One final question, Jimmy, then I'll let you go. I appreciate your time very much, as always. I'll go back to the game. We'll circle back to that. What are a couple things you're going to be looking for Sunday?
Well, I'm going to be looking for the nerve factor for the Falcons early on. It's not unusual for a very nervous quarterback or young center or young running back to cause a turnover, to make that big mistake. And if you see that early in this football game, you'll smell blood among the Patriots. If they are able to get a break on special teams, which the Patriots are very good at, you will find that this game can get out of hand and get out of hand pretty quickly. It's the nerve factor that will play a large role in the outcome.
Jimmy, it's always a pleasure. You know that. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it very much.
Hope to get to see you soon. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Jimmy Cephalo, the former Nittany Lion, play-by-play voice, Miami Dolphins. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Talked a lot of football there with Jimmy. Obviously, saw the Patriots twice this year against the Dolphins, both being in the AFC East. But you probably did not expect the wine conversation. Did you?
My favorite line in Tom Hanks' movie Bachelor Party, a little vino would be kino.
Jimmy's been a collector for, as he mentioned, 25 years. And it's something he got into. Janice is okay with it.
Well, especially when you take one room and, you know, recreate a wine cellar. It's, that's quite
exactly.
That's quite the investment.
Yes. They can't have cellars there. Can't have cellars down there. So I did ask Drew, did Cephalo interview hold off Sean in the suit replacement show?
I think it did without any trouble at all.
He said many, many things are capable of holding off Sean in the suit. Many, many things. This day in sports history holds it off. still waiting for that digital media sale. It'll happen any day. All right. But collectors of any kind are, I think, are fascinating. Wine collection is fascinating because, because wine you can collect and it gives you the feel of a region. It gives you a feel of a different part of the world. There's a different taste to a French wine as opposed to a California or a New York State wine. it also can give you era. This may have been a wine that was served on VJ Day, for example. This may have been a wine that was served Man's Landing on the Moon. I mean, it's something. I mean, you know, this could have been the wine from your wedding. You found bottles from that day that were specially labeled, or you kept bottles that they were specially labeled. Whatever. He is a collector of it. He's a collector of it. I'm talking about hundreds of bottles of it. Hundreds. Now, I mentioned Jack being a connoisseur. Jack makes frequent trips to Napa, occasionally to Sonoma. And loves to tour the region and tour the wineries. Enjoys it very much. He enjoys them both. So, we talk a lot of sports. We can talk about the sophistication of the world, can't we? For a moment?
Yeah, it's that rare moment. You have your pinky finger out while you're enjoying a drink, sure.
Oh, boy.
Classy.
It really wasn't where I was going.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. That's fine. Okay. And the conversation is over. All right. Last night, Penn State played one of those classic games last night where they lost in three overtimes at Indiana. It was a night where Lamar Stevens had 26, career high. Tony Carr had 23 points, 14 assists. He was one off the Penn State single game record for assists. And the odd thing is last night, the free throw line, which had been so good to them in the non-conference schedule, they were about 80%, has not helped them much in the last 2.5 weeks in the conference schedule. It hasn't helped them.
I wanted to ask you about the first overtime, because it looked like they were getting through the Indiana zone rather easily. Were you, Dick, kind of wondering, oh, they're going to really put the hammer down and get this thing in the bag?
No. Indiana, first of all, is not comfortable playing zone. It's not their base defense. But Tom Crean going zone was him throwing up the white flag that they couldn't handle Penn State one-on-one. I mean, that's what that meant. But it is Penn State did a good job of getting through it. There's a certain hole in it. You know, the primary area you attack it is at the free throw line, elbow to elbow. That's the hole in it. They put Lamar Stevens there. They were able to exploit it. But you also have to hit some outside shots. Penn State in the overtimes. Tony Carr hit a huge three. It was a 92-88 game in the first overtime. I'm sorry, in the second overtime. And I said on the broadcast, I said, Dick, now they need a three. They need to change the dynamics of the scoreboard now. Because at that point, they would get within two, fall back four, get within two, fall back four. So they've got to change the math. And then Tony Carr hit a three to make it 92-91. Now you change the math. And what happened was Indiana then came down, and they only hit one out of two at the free throw line. And Tony Carr came down and hit two of two at the free throw line. And when we saw a third overtime, they'll be exhausted. There isn't a lot. They're going to do a lot of film work today, and maybe some cold tub, things like that. Then really have a full practice tomorrow to get ready for Rutgers on Saturday. But you're talking about Newkirk, veteran, played at Pitt, now at Indiana, been around the block, Johnson third year, Bryant's a top 20 NBA pick. May thought he'd come out last year, didn't, and decided to go back. And those were all three of them had career games last night. Bryant had 31, career high, previous best been 23. Johnson had 27, career best had been 21. Newkirk had 27, career best had been 20. Penn State fell behind 13 in the first half, got it to 9. Then they out, you know, and after giving up 46 points in the first half, Penn State only gave up 26 points in the second half. Both teams were dog tired at the end. That's why Josh Newkirk hit a huge three in the third overtime. Nobody had any legs in the third overtime. That's why when he hit that three, and even from there, Penn State battled back and got back to within four at one point in the third overtime. Had a chance to cut it closer. Play Rutgers Saturday at 1.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports Bozo of the Day is a system. It is the system of baseball. Catcher Caleb Joseph of the Baltimore Orioles lost his arbitration case, but he's still going to get a $176,500 raise. Joseph wanted $1 million in arbitration. The Orioles offered $700,000. Last year, Joseph made $523,500. So he gets a $176,500 raise. Now let's look at Caleb Joseph's season. Do you realize he came to the plate 141 times last year? He had 132 official at-bats. Seven times he walked. Twice he put down a sacrifice bunt. So in 141 plate appearances and 132 at-bats, he had three doubles. Do you want to know how many RBIs Caleb Joseph had last year in his 141 plate appearances? Zero. He didn't drive in a single run all year. He hit 174 and set a record last year for the most plate appearances in a season and the most at-bats in a season without driving in a run. The previous record was set in 1971 by Wilbur Wood of the Chicago White Sox. You're asking, what position did Wilbur Wood play? Well, I saw Wilbur Wood pitch maybe three, four times in my lifetime at Fenway Park. Lexington, Massachusetts own Wilbur Wood. One year he won 24 games and he lost 20. Wilbur Wood is a pitcher. This is back when you could hit in the American League. Had 124 plate appearances with 96 at-bats and no RBIs. That had been the record until Caleb Joseph had his memorable 2016 season. For having three doubles and no RBIs and setting a record for zero RBIs in 132 at-bats and 141 plate appearances, he will get a $176,500 raise. Now, this isn't Caleb Joseph's fault. Not in the least. It's not the Orioles' fault. Caleb Joseph did not go over to Camden Yards and hold Buck Showalter and Peter Angelos hostage and agree to release them one at a time until he got his demands. No. They went to arbitration. Joseph figured, what the heck, I'll go for it. He put down $1 million. Orioles put down $700,000. Arbitrator picked $700,000. Still in picking $700,000, he got a $176,500 raise for no RBIs. That's the system is the sports bozo of the day. I give Caleb Joseph all the credit in the world for making the major leagues. He actually played in-state college against the Spikes when he was at Aberdeen. He was a seventh-round pick, you know. This is not the guy that, you know, Vanderbilt wanted him, Arkansas wanted him. He ended up going to Lincecum College, where he was last year there his junior year. I think he was the Atlantic Sun. I want to say he was the Atlantic Sun Conference Tournament MVP. And then he ended up being a seventh-round pick of the Orioles. So, I mean, this is, hey, look, to make the major leagues, you got to be good. I don't care what your numbers are. But I see a $176,000 500 raise. Like, there's something wrong with that system. All right. Neil Coulong now joins us. Neil, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show.
There's a lot of different areas to look at here, and it's not just the Steelers. But I want to start, for example, the draft will be coming up. Western PA guy Malik Hooker. Neil, he's really good. I mean, great speed. But he's going to miss the combine now, isn't he?
Yeah. It looks like that the injury that he suffered is going to keep him out for a bit, and that definitely kind of throws the draft world off a little bit. He's a highly regarded prospect. I think you're definitely looking at him not being at the combine. I don't think really it will entirely affect his draft stock too much. At the same time, more than anything, if he can't work out, he can go and participate in interviews. You know, I think that's probably for a guy like him that might be as valuable as whatever he might do on the field.
Zeke Elliott had obviously a great year for the Cowboys in his rookie season. There are a couple of running backs right now that look like they could project to be first round guys. How leery, though, are NFL teams still of drafting a running back, or did Elliott solve that for them?
I think you had a unique situation with Elliott. One, for him, I think he was certainly one of the best running back prospects we've seen in a while. And in that, I think there's something to be said about him, you know, potentially breaking the trend of where running backs have been drafted lately. But at the same time, Dallas was in a very unique position. They were a very good team. We saw that this year, obviously, and Elliott definitely helped that. But they had a talented roster. The biggest issue that they had is they were throwing, you know, guys off the street under center to play quarterback. And the team, you know, it just torpedoed and you know, really just fell apart. They were much better than the fourth overall pick in the draft. So with that, you have a little bit more luxury to kind of look at a player that you really need that's going to be of high level. Everything I saw last year, it's not so much that Elliott was a surprise at four. In the running back position itself might not be as, you know, incredibly valued today as it was. But he was a guy that, you know, I think possibly the fact that Dallas was sitting in that position might have been why he went there. If Dallas was drafting, say, like 8 or 9, he might have fallen to that spot as well. I don't think either way, you know, his production, his ability, which really impressed me this season. I haven't been that impressed watching a rookie play in a long time. But all of that said, I don't think it's necessarily a trend in the right direction. I really think it was more kind of a combination of a very rare player and a team that had motivation to take a player like him that high.
Right, exactly. And there's another guy, too, that I think a lot of people want to take a long, hard look at that they're not really going to get to see at the combine either. That's Corey Davis of Western Michigan, where you can see the natural talent, but you ask yourself about the competition he faced.
Yeah, the whole level of competition I think that a player faces, it's really an arbitrary thing. And you're always going to say that to some degree from any player that's not playing at a Power 5 school. But you have to look at his physical ability and what he did against what he was up against. You know, I mean, for a draft that's now progressed to the point where a team is going to trade half of their future away for an FCS quarterback who played half of his senior season, second overall, I think we're at a point where we might say this is a development league. I think, you know, whatever talent level he has is going to justify the round that they take him in more so than he didn't play against anybody at Western Michigan. He obviously did very well. He played against the guys he was going up against. And it, for me anyway, within college football, it's not as if you know, outside of a few exceptions, you're not playing teams that have nothing but pros on their roster anyway. So going up against the guys that you're going up against, you still have to evaluate the player long term, and that's really more of what they're going to be looking for.
Right, exactly. The Steelers, how are they cap-wise right now? Because as you were, I know you retweeted something about the cap problem of the Ravens. So where are the Steelers cap-wise? Because normally they're not a, a team that, that tries to move up in the draft anyway, but where are they with their numbers?
Where they sit right now, and this is without Le'Veon Bell on the roster counting for anything, and it's without an expected extension to be given to Antonio Brown, they stand with the carryover money that they're going to get. They stand to be a pretty healthy amount underneath the cap, which is kind of similar of most teams nowadays in the NFL because of the carryover rule that they put into the CBA. So it, proportionally speaking, I don't think that it's you know, exceedingly high for the rest of the league, but they have the money that they need to kind of have the off season that they normally have. There might be something there if they want to poke around at another free agent the way that they have in the past, like a Mike Mitchell or a Ladarius Green. But by and large, I think from my end, they can consider it a pretty successful off season. If they are able to tag, if you know, possibly very, very long shot, but possibly get an extension to Le'Veon Bell and get Antonio Brown to a reasonable deal. If they do those two things, I think they'll consider the offseason a success. It's certainly possible they might want to look into, you know, upgrading somewhere. I think it, you know, something along the defensive line might not be a terrible idea, considering the depth that they have there. Outside linebacker is a position that they're going to want to address somewhere. Like they pretty much always have to do every year now. That could be, you know, they certainly have the money to probably make a competitive offer to Jarvis Jones if they'd want to do that. I think they might be interested in doing that, but I am not sure how much he's going to want to stay considering they benched him halfway through the year. So they have enough money to make a few moves, but I certainly, as is typical in Pittsburgh, I don't think they're going to make any big splash or anything like that.
How far away are they from New England, in your opinion? Is there a chasm or is it a slight gap? How far away are they?
I think, based on the last game that they played, which was horrendous, and we talked about this the other week as well, right. You'd think they'd be much further off than they are. But they just haven't played New England at full strength. You know, I know that's convenient and it's an easy excuse to make, but they didn't play them with all of their guys, and that really is their own fault. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, forces outside of their own control controlled Martavis Bryant and Le'Veon Bell to get them suspended, to get Ben Roethlisberger injured. They haven't put all of those guys on the field yet, and I really think they're not terribly far off, but New England clearly is a better coach team. They're more disciplined, and they have stronger units across their defense than the Steelers do, but the Steelers would be a considerably stronger offensive team if they had all of their guys in when they would play the Patriots. So I think if things can turn around for them in that regard and they can get their big four offensive players on the field for 16 games, you're going to look at a team that can challenge anybody in the NFL pretty easily. I think if all those guys are there, you're looking at a 12-4, 13-3 level team. The Patriots doing that again is kind of expected, but you put that game in Heinz Field, from what we've seen of the Steelers recently, that's going to be a tough place for New England to come in and win. So, that said, I don't think they're that far off, but clearly the better team won this season, and they're probably going to be Super Bowl champions too.
Who wins? Okay, so you're picking New England to win.
I think they will, yeah. I think for me, the worst thing that can happen to a high-power rhythm offense the way that the Falcons are with a quarterback who's playing really at the height of his game is to give him a week off and to put him in another stadium. There's a lot that you can gain just from a comfort level playing at home 3 weeks in a row with a bye week in there the way that the Falcons did. They were prepared at a very high level for the divisional round, and they obviously ran a train through Green Bay, which I think might have had more to do with the fact that Green Bay had nobody in their secondary that could play than it did just how great the Falcons are. But they're such a well-coached unit. Shanahan has done a remarkable job with the players that they have in there. There's a reason he's the next head coach in the NFL. But there's a rhythm and there's a fluidity to that. And to take them out of the Georgia Dome, put them into another stadium against certainly a better defense than they played in the conference championship game, I just don't think they're going to have the scratch to be able to pull that out.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulon joining us today, USA Today. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, great to have you with us. Dick in Milton joins us. Hi, Dick. Thanks for joining us today. Great to hear you.
Hey, Steve. And I know you weren't criticizing the Orioles and you weren't criticizing Angelos, but basically Caleb Joseph gets paid the money he gets paid to be the backup catcher and call baseball games. And he is a decent backup catcher. That being said, because, first of all, Matt Wieters is prone to injuries and has been. So consequently, you need a decent guy to catch to be your backup. And that's it. There aren't a lot of guys that can do that at a high level.
That's David Ross, because Wieters was out, 2015, and I think Caleb Joseph caught 100 games that year, and he hit 14 or 15 home runs, if I recall.
Right, but irrespective of that, if he really wasn't hitting anything, which he did last year, he gets paid money to catch a baseball. That's pretty much what he gets paid for. You know, the hitting anything right. He does other than that is, to me, is a bonus. I'll put it to you that way. And I'm not defending.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I know. I know what you mean. I'm just saying, $176,000 raise? We got people here trying to gut it out at 2 and 3% a year.
Well, I understand that. But if you put that in perspective, how much they're paying some of those guys to do little or nothing full-time seems like a lot to me anyhow. And I just don't want to think people, your listeners out there, to think that here's a guy that gets paid that kind of money and he's that kind of a baseball player. But he's a backup catcher. That's his position. You know,
exactly.
It beats the ball hitting the umpire going all the way to the backstop. I guess I'll leave it at that.
was it the Bob Uecker that said, "How do you catch a knuckleball?" He says, "You get up, and when it stops rolling, you pick it up."
That's pretty much it. Okay, Steve. There you go. Thank you.
Thanks, Dick. Appreciate it. Yeah, my knock was on the arbitration system itself. You're like, okay, but. Most teams, now Caleb Joseph's 30 years old, so he's not going to be in this position. But there are a lot of teams are avoiding arbitration with younger stars. And this happened with Andrew McCutchen. This happened with Starling Marte. This happened with Gregory Polanco. All with the Pirates, because the Pirates really were the forerunner for this, where they would sign them to long-term deals so they could avoid arbitration. Now, Caleb Joseph's not in that spot. Joseph's going into his third year in the majors as the backup catcher, as Dick said. And, yeah, they do have a guy with a rotator cuff problem that has been prone to injury in his career. And David Ross, a perfect example. David Ross finally retired, and he made a living out of being the backup catcher with the Braves, the Red Sox, the Cubs. You know, he was John Lester's catcher all that time. As Dick said, it's a position you need. You have to have backup catcher. And that's why when it came to Pudge Rodriguez being a first ballot Hall of Famer, he put up all those numbers and did what he did in that 100-degree heat of Texas 80-something times a year. Wow. $176,000 raise. Man. Back in the old days, which, by the way, was the wrong days, all right? It's because I think it was Joe DiMaggio. 1 year, hit like three fewer home runs. He had like 30-something home runs. And instead of hitting 340, he hit 325. And he was given a $5,000 pay cut. by the Yankees because his numbers dropped. He hit .325 with 30 home runs. What? But the most important part of the Caleb Joseph story, as far as I'm concerned, is it allowed us to, again, bring back the legend of Wilbur Wood. Knuckleballer extraordinaire. Pitched both games of a doubleheader on a couple different occasions in his career. Starting both ends. Won 24 games one year, in the same year he lost 20. That's amazing. And obviously Wilbur could not hit. And I can tell you, after I probably went to 3 or 4 games in his career that he pitched at Fenway Park. Yeah, it just not happened. It just turned out they were playing and he was the pitcher. And he couldn't run to save his soul. He was a pitcher. But yeah, Caleb Joseph, good backup. Good backup catcher. He's actually hit, I think, 28, 29 home runs in his career. Tomorrow on the show, Mike Conti is going to join us from the Falcons Radio Network. But that's not it. We're also going to have on the show, coming up tomorrow, Nora Princiati from the Boston Globe, who will join us from Houston at the Super Bowl. So Nora Princiati from the Boston Globe. My brother will be on the show, who did not see a shadow. We've had confirmation. Today's show held off Sean in the suit for one more day.
Yay.
Now, Sean and Frilazzo, they're talking.
There you go.
It's amazing. Frilazzo has stepped in there and done so well.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.